Why Yisrael Fell. This is Stefan Yah, YahvahYahweh.name. We should go an hour or under. Maybe we'll get done way before that. Our email address, of course, is StefanYah@YahvahYahweh.name. StefanYah@YahvahYahweh.name. And we're going to go to Isaiah 31. To start off with, our main text is Ezekiel 43 and Isaiah, or Yeshayahu 29. I just want to start throwing some numbers at you there, but Isaiah 31. We just want to start off with verse 1 and 2. Woe to them that go down to Mitzrayim or Egypt for help and stay on horses. Now, this is could apply to our vehicles today, our SUVs, particularly those great big pushy things. So woe to those that stay on horses and trust in chariots, because there are many, and in horsemen, because they are very strong. But they look not unto the separated one of Yisrael, neither do they seek Yahweh, not L-O-R-D, but Yahweh. Yet he also is wise, and will bring evil, and will not call back his words, but will arise against the house of the evildoers, and against the help of them that work iniquity or lawlessness. Now the Mitzrayim are many, and not Yahweh, and their horses flesh, and not spirit. When Yahweh shall stretch out his hand, both he that helped shall fall, and he that is hoping shall fall down. They all shall fail together. So that's the rest of the story, the end of the story there. The story is that many of the house of Yisrael fell, and many Jews have fallen. And we know that. That's a fact. Here in our own scriptures, we admit that our leaders had fallen. At least most of them had. Judges 17, verse 6. Just to refresh these real wonderful parts of scripture for you. Chapter 17. What was our... Now this is present and past. What was our problem? And what is our present problem? That's just right here. And we're going to read it in two different places. Judges 17, 6 says, in those days there was no king in Yisrael, but every man did that which was right in his own eyes. That sounds like Jeremiah or Jeremiah. Every man did that which was right, and there was no king. They said, we will have no ruler over us, except for Baraka, or except for Pontius Pilate and Caesar. Except for Adolf Hitler. We have no leader except for Adolf, except for this Republican or this Democrat, while ignoring what the right choice would have been. We voted in these compromising politicians for the sake of our pockets. Our at the gas pump, price of bullets was more important. 21-25, well, I'm not criticizing you, probably. I'm criticizing those of us. Among us, or that part of us, or part of you and I that have fallen. So the very end of Judges says this, the very last verse, and this is a feast chapter here in chapter 21, by the way. Why is that such a neat thing? Well, if you've never had a feast with Yahweh, then you really have missed out. You're going to be coming to some interesting times. Judges 21:25. In those days there was no king in Yisrael. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. So that's the same thing I just read there in 17:6. But I don't need to have two scriptures that say the same thing to prove a point. All I really need is one, but I just wanted to read both of them for you, that it's repeated there. We also see about King David in 1 Kings 15. Now, I didn't read this ahead of time. This refers to... something during the time of King Asa's reign, 1 Kings 15. Just briefly, if I could, because I see it's in my notes here, and I forgot to look it up. I was saved in 1975 by Messiah. Okay, now here it is, 15, 1 Kings. Now in the 18th year of King Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, reigned Abiam over Yehuda. 3 years he reigned in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was... And verse 3, he walked in all the sins of his father, which he had done before him, and his heart was not perfect. Is your heart perfect? Well, I don't know about, you know, I know that the person who called himself my pastor, he said that his heart was, but mine, I will confess, is not. It's still not perfect. I'm still asking Yahweh to perfect my heart, my desire to please him and to keep his commandments. So I'm being humble in that area, being honest with you all. I'm confessing that to the world, that Stefania Eber is not perfect. He is defective and must be replaced. No, we're not going to replace him. Not yet, anyway. And he had done all the sins of his father, which he had done before him, and his heart was not perfect with Yahweh, as the heart of David, his father, was. So even David, of course, was not perfect. His heart, he desired to do the right thing. He just wasn't able to walk in Yahweh's laws all the way through there. And then verse 8, Abiam slept with his fathers, and they buried him in the city of David, and Asa, his son, reigned in his stead. And verse 11, Asa, his son. So Asa, in verse 11, did that which was right in the eyes of Yahweh, as did David, his father. And he took away the Sodomites out of the land. So that would be nice. And removed all the idols that his fathers had made. Fathers, plural. And also Maacah, his grandmother. Actually, it says in most versions mother, but it doesn't make any difference anyway. With grandmother, even her he removed from being queen because she had made an idol in a grove or a asherim, or Asherah, or grove. And Asa destroyed her idol and burnt it by the brook Kidron. Imagine right in front of your grandmother taking her idol and be careful. Yeah, but that was what Asa did. Yeah, he cleaned it up. He was kind of the Matt Dillon of the era of the kings there. If you've ever heard Gunsmoke on the internet, on radio there, where we're going to clean up Dodge. Well, he cleaned up Yisrael, didn't he? King Asa. He was about the third best king there, if not the best. Second Chronicles chapter 7, and then we're going to go all the way through that. So here's a big, big chapter. It's 22 verses, so it's not that big. And I might skip here and there a little bit to make, just kind of emphasize, while not yelling, I don't think we have to yell in order, as being a preacher, in order to emphasize a word. We can lift up our voice and have inflection, but we don't have to yell at people necessarily. We lift up our voice, but where does it say to yell and to shout? Well, it might say to shout, okay, but not to shout and scream. Where does it say to scream at people? It doesn't. So those preachers who do that, stop that right now. 2 Chronicles 7:1. Now when Solomon, or Shalom, had made an end of praying, the fire came down from heaven and consumed the burnt offering, and the esteem of Yahweh filled the house. And the priests could not enter into the house of Yahweh because the esteem of Yahweh had filled the mighty house of Yahweh. When all the children of Israel saw the fire came down and the esteem of Yahweh upon the house, or the tabernacle, they bowed themselves with their faces to the ground upon the pavement. And it says here, worshipped. I'm going to change that to praise. That's legitimate. So they bowed down and they praised Yahweh, saying, "For he is great, for his mercy endureth forever." Then the king and all the people offered offerings before Yahweh. There we have the Levites there and the instruments of music, which David the king had made to praise Yahweh, because his mercy endureth forever, when David praised by their ministry. And the priests sounded trumpets before them, and all Israel stood. Moreover, Shalom hallowed, or rather set apart, the middle of the court that was before the house of Yahweh, and for the area offered burnt offerings, the fat of the peace offerings, because the brazen altar which Solomon had made was not able to receive the burnt offerings. So he made that there as well. And the meat offerings and the fat. And at the same time, Shalom kept the feast 7 days. Ooh, nice. Keeping the feast day 7 days. And all Israel with him, a very great congregation from the entering in at Hamath unto the river of Egypt. I mean, I've got to probably stick with the English word there, Egypt, okay? And then the eighth day, that's the last day of that feast, they made a solemn assembly, as is commanded, of course, for they kept the dedication of the altar 7 days and the feast 7 days. Yes, where do we see that today? The Worldwide Church of God or something? Even they have backed off of that to a large extent, or for the most part. Okay, 2 Chronicles 7:10 now. And on the 23rd day, that's the 23rd day of the 7th month, that's the same month that the Feast of Tabernacles is in, and Feast of Atonement and Trumpets, he sent the people away into their tents, glad and merry in heart, for the goodness that Yahweh had showed unto David and to Shalomon and to Israel his people. I think I better say Solomon. Thus Solomon finished the house of Yahweh and the king's house and all that came into Solomon's heart to make in the house of Yahweh, and in his own house he prosperously effected. And Yahweh appeared to Solomon by night. So, it says in John that no one has seen the Father at any time. So who appeared here? It says L-O-R-D in my good old trusty, dusty King James here, but it's not L-O-R-D because that means Baal, or Baal means Lord anyway. So I don't know why it wouldn't translate the other way, that Lord would equal Baal, and Baal would equal Lord. And so we'll just use Yahweh because that's in the manuscripts. If you look up in your King James, or, if you look up in your, not the interlinear, what is it? The lexicon. If you look in your lexicon or concordance, you'll see it's Yahweh. In 2 Chronicles 7:12, it's not L-O-R-D at all. It's Yahweh, Y-H-V-H. Yahweh appeared to Solomon by night. So here he appeared to Solomon and said unto him, I have heard thy prayer and have chosen this place to myself for an house of offering. And I shut up heaven that there be no rain. So this is Yahweh speaking. Or this is the son of Yahweh. Or if I command the locusts to devour the land, or if I sent pestilence among my people, if my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, that's idolatry and Sabbath breaking and sexual immorality, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and will heal their land. That's one place where the Christian churches of America, the modern Western churches, are missing out now because they're not preaching against sin. They're not preaching sin, right, and repentance and righteousness and judgment any longer. No, there's always the judgments. It's all the Hollywood love, the Berkeley concept of love with no definitions. Thank you, because if you define love, then they say that it doesn't mean anything if you define the word. Yeah, that's what they say. Now my eyes shall be open and my ears attent unto the prayer that is made in this place. For now, Yahweh says, I have chosen and set apart this house, that my name may be there forever, and my eyes and heart shall be there perpetually. And as for thee, if thou wilt walk before me as David thy father walked, and do according to all that I have commanded thee, and shall observe my statutes and my judgments, which includes the feast days, which includes not sleeping with somebody other than your mate, your married mate, then will I establish the throne of thy kingdom, according as I have covenanted with David thy father, saying, there shall not fail thee a man to be ruler in Israel. So we're going to talk about that. Who is a ruler? Where is the kings? And so on. We're going to talk about who was the ruler. But if you turn away and forget my statutes and my commandments, which I have set before you, and shall go and serve other Elohim and worship them, then will I pluck them up by the roots out of the land which I have given them, and this house which I have set apart for my name, and I will cast out of my sight, and will make it to be a proverb and a byword among all nations. And this house which is high shall be an astonishment to every one that passes by it, so that he shall say, why has Yahweh done this unto this land and unto this house? Stopping there at verse 21 a second. Think of Jerusalem. Who's in charge in Jerusalem? Is anybody? Everybody's in charge, right? All the nations seem to be running that place. And, of course, the council of chosen Jews there, somebody appear to be running it, but why do they allow all these different religions, New Age, Eastern religions, you know, they're all there. Well, that's said that right here. Because if they disobeyed all of his commandments, statutes, and judgments, and then Yahweh is going to give them up to more commandment breaking, more lasciviousness. And people will say, why has Yahweh done this unto this land and unto this house? I will pluck them up by the roots out of my land, which I have given thee. So, you know, he's dispersed us, the northern 10 tribes of Israel, no matter if we call ourselves Irish or Scottish or German or almost any race except for Greek, I would say, or Egyptian. And he cast us, scattered us all over in the diaspora around the world. He scattered the tribe of Yehuda, the southern kingdom. He scattered us, the Jews, our tribe of Yehuda, around the world, as you probably know. And it shall be answered, because they forsook Yahweh of their fathers, which brought them forth out of the land of Egypt, Mitzrayim, laid hold on other Elohim, and worshipped them, and served them. Wherefore has he brought all this evil upon us? So there's the answer right there, that last verse of 2 Chron 7. Therefore he has brought all this evil upon them, because they worshipped other Elohim. What other? Well, like Baal, like Christos, Iesus, Dagon, Ashtoreth, around Easter time, Easter parades, you know, all that dirty stuff. But we are in 2 Chron. Why did Jerusalem fall? Why did the Jews fall? Why did the Holocaust, and why are things happening now? Why is it in America that we're not even in charge? I mean, the Caucasians are unemployed, most of us sitting around in some kind of government dole or another. You know, the different initials, I don't know, DD, this and that or something, or food stamps and so on. That's a shame. It's such a shame that we are, you know, why are there Muslims in the land in Europe and taking over and afflicting people once again? One of the big races, the big religions that takes over and afflicts men, women, and children. And yet, we say they're the most peaceful. I mean, the presidents of the United States have made the statement they're the most peaceful race that there is, the Muslim race. And there are a lot of peaceful ones, but he's not taking into account that the intent of their Quran tells them to afflict and to punish and to murder those who will not accept their Elohim. And I can't even remember the name of the book to look up at the moment, but it's real easy. And it'll probably come to me later. Look up thebereancall.org, thebereancall.org, and they'll have some good articles there that will instruct you if you don't know what that is. Sarai, that was the book of Surai. A lot of information in there, which we don't even have to read. But for those who say that it's a peaceful race and that they're the basic purpose of their religion is just to live in peace with everybody and to you know, not confiscate others' land, steal their land or anything, well, that's wrong. That is not true that they are doing it. So we could say that, you know, they took the most of the city already and taking it all. They're not going to, you know, we're not going to sue for peace by giving them all of our property and our families. That's not going to be enough to satisfy them. But why? Because of our disobedience. Because we don't want to keep the commandments, statutes, and judgments. Well, we might want to, but we don't try hard enough. We don't even study to see what they are. Here I am complaining. Well, maybe you study, maybe I do, you know, which I do, but and I know you all do. 1 Samuel 10:19, but we don't all study, do we? That's where the problem is. We run into resistance out there. 1 Samuel 10:19, you have rejected Yahweh, and you have this day rejected your Yahweh, or a mighty one there, who himself saved you out of all of your adversities and your tribulations, and you have said unto him, No, but set a king over us. Now therefore present yourselves before Yahweh by your tribes and by your thousands. There it talks about in chapter 27, verse 27, the children of Belial said, How shall this man save us? And they despised him. And they're talking about Samuel there. Okay, so we'll go on to the chapter 12, verse 10. Little warm here. And they cried unto Yahweh and said, We have sinned, because we have forsaken Yahweh, and have served Baalim and Ashtoreth. But now deliver us out of the hand of our enemies, and we will serve thee. Also see 1 Kings 11:5. And we'll look at Judges. We look at Judges 3:10, first of all. So we'll go back. We'll turn back here. Judges 3. Should have been about the previous book there. Judges 3:10. What did that say there? And the Spirit of Yahweh came upon him, and he judged Israel and went out to war. Okay. I don't know where they were going with that one, but Judges 2:13. And they forsook Yahweh and served Baal and Ashtoreth. Then we did evil in the sight of Yahweh. Chapter 10, verse 6. I know where I'm going with this. I'm not lost yet, I don't think. But having seen your moments, I guess. Praise Yahweh. 10, verse 6 through 9. And the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of Yahweh. Now, when will we ever learn? I mean, here we are, even in Scriptures. What kind of a book is this that where we admit our own mistakes, our own sins, and the sins of our fathers and leaders? But, well, that proves all the more that this book is true, is credible. It's a truthful book, the Scriptures. The children of Israel did evil. They served Baalim and Ashtoreth, and that's what the Christian churches do, and they don't know it. The gods of Syria, the Elohim of Sidon, and the Elohim of Moab, and the Elohim of the children of Ammon, and the Elohim of the Philistines, and forsook Yahweh and served not him. Oh, not us. No, not here in the year 2011. Oh, yeah, you want to bet? Yeah. No, you don't bet, of course. That's good. Don't bet. 12, verse 10. And, Well, Judges. That was a Samuel reference there. 16, verse 2. See? I'm still on track here. Judges 16, verse 2. And verse 3. Then went Samson to Gaza, and saw there a harlot, and went in unto her. Oh, real good there, Samson. And it was told the Gazites, saying, Samson has come hither. And they compassed him in, and they laid wait for him all night in the gate of the city, and were quiet all night, saying, In the morning, when it is day, we shall kill or murder him. And Samson lay till midnight, and arose at midnight, and took the doors of the gate of the city, and the two posts, and went away with him, the bar and all. He tore it down, and put them upon his shoulders, and carried them up to the top of the hill, that is before Ebron. And it came to pass afterward that he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. And that was found in Judges there, verse 16. So the, you know, doing evil in the sight of Yahweh just never pays off. 1 Kings 11:5, so go to the right. Yeah, they're serving their Elohims. Their idolatry, their Sabbath breaking. I was once a sinner. I'm not now because I don't make a practice of sinning. I don't call myself a sinner. I've been redeemed by the blood of the Lamb of Yahushua the Messiah. However, I inadvertently have sinned recently. Yes, but I'm not going to, better not tell the world too much more about that. Because they, you know, they think that I'm supposed to be absolutely perfect, because here I am on the radio talking to you. For it came to pass when Shalom was old that his wives turned away his heart after other Elohim, and his heart was not perfect with Yahweh, as was the heart of David his father. For Solomon went after Ashtoreth the Elohim of the Sidonians, and after Milcom the abomination of the Ammonites. And Solomon did evil in the sight of Yahweh, and went not fully after Yahweh, as did David his father. Who wants to be like Solomon? Oh, I'm the only one with my hand up in the air. Oh, get embarrassed there. I guess I better put it back down, huh? So, no, I don't think I really want to be like Solomon. People use that as an alibi. Well, he had multiple wives, and he got away with it. But did he, really? I don't know. You know, I think I'd rather be like Yochanan the Immerser, Yochanan the Baptist. And, okay, 1 Samuel 15:14. Just one verse here, if we didn't cover this already. 15:14. So far, we're 26 minutes into the broadcast already. I cannot believe that much time has passed, but these are long references here that I've given so far. And right now, just a verse or two here and there, talking about our defender, Almighty Yahweh. Yahweh Yireh, our defender, Yahweh. 1 Samuel 15:14 says, Then Samuel said, What meaneth then this bleating of the sheep? Samuel in the previously came to Saul, and Saul said unto him, Blessed be Yahweh, I have performed the commandment of Yahweh. Yeah, right, Saul. Samuel said, What do you mean by this bleating of the sheep in my ears, and the lowing of the oxen which I hear? And Saul said, They have brought them from the Amalekites, for the people spare the best of the sheep and the oxen to offer unto Yahweh, and the rest we have utterly destroyed. Well, he was supposed to destroy all of them. Who knows what they did with these animals, Sodomites and all, and animal molesters that we have amongst us. I think that'll be the next legislation. We'll vote for a president who believes in bestiality. And then he'll get elected, probably, with the mentality, TV mentality, the Berkeley mentality that we have, we Christians, or we, you know, not we, but... Oh, well, then Samuel said unto Saul, Stay, and I will tell thee what Yahweh has said to me this night. And he said, Say on. Samuel said, When thou wast little in thine own sight, wast thou not made the head of the tribes of Israel? And Yahweh appointed thee king over Israel. Yahweh set thee on a journey and said, Go and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them. And you know, destroy everything. Utterly destroy everything. 21. The people took of the spoil, the sheep and oxen, the chief of the things which should have been utterly destroyed. They should have been destroyed, but they did not, because, I mean, these are good-looking animals. A lot of good beef on them there. And they sacrificed unto Yahweh with these polluted animals in Gilgal. And Samuel said, Has Yahweh as great delight in burnt offerings and as in obeying the voice of Yahweh? So these burnt offerings were polluted offerings. Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, or is better than offering, and to hearken is better than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft. When we rebel, we're just like an old witch or warlock. And stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. We don't want to be stubborn. We don't want to be haughty, prideful, especially if we're a leader. Because thou hast rejected the word of Yahweh, he has also rejected thee from being king. Yeah, that's the final word there. Sorry about that. To Saul, to King Saul, he has rejected thee as being king. Oh, what a feeling that would bring. 1 Samuel 14:47. So Saul took the kingdom over Israel and fought against all his enemies. Let's see. He was successful there. Wherever he turned himself, he vexed them. So he was doing well against Edom and Zobah and the Philistines and so on. Okay, I put that That verse should have been first. Kind of snuck that in too late. Yeah. But Yahweh is our defender. Yahweh Nisi is our banner. And the battle is Yahweh's. I think that's what I was going to look up. 1 Samuel. Why isn't that in there? Let's look at chapter 15. Maybe that was it. 47? No. Yes, a lot of failure and disappointments. A lot of failure is found here about our forefathers. Even David, who suffered the punishment at Yahweh's hand there in 1 Samuel chapter 30. Now we'll look at 2 Samuel also. So 1 Samuel chapter 30. Let's turn ahead a little bit. Our hearts were just not in the right place. And the rest of the story is punishment is coming. And after that, Yahweh, his deliverance and mercy is coming too. But first of all, we have to go through the fire. We have to be purged and cleansed with the fire. As all I hear even Christian and Protestant preachers often, certain ones, I guess at least on sermon audio, say that we are headed for some judgment, for some discipline. That's good. You know, that kind of reminds me of the good old time so-called Pentecostal preaching of we used to be a member of some of those assemblies. Really did enjoy it at the time. All done in ignorance, of course. We didn't know about Baal and the venerable day of the sun. We'd hide the Easter eggs outside the church on Saturday, and the kids would go out and find them. So we didn't know that was. We thought it was good, clean fun. Anyway, you know, we'll move on here. What about David's punishment there? And it came to pass when David and his men were come to Ziklag on the third day, the Amalekites had invaded the south and Ziklag and smitten Ziklag. And burned it with fire. So, there we go. The enemy came in like a thunder and had taken the women captive that there were therein. They slew not any of the women, either great or small, but they carried them away and went on their way. But you like that? They came and grabbed up all of our wives and took them away. I wouldn't like that. So David and his men came to the city. Behold, it was burned with fire, and their wives and their sons and their daughters were taken captive. I think that has happened, you know, at least with our daughters, that they've been taken captive by Babylon, by these Masonic and Knights of Columbus, and you know, the different council of governments around that have been responsible for conniving and concocting plans on how to take our children away so that they wouldn't keep the Sabbath and the feast days and the names. And, you know, they would know where us extremists, where we're going to lead our children to. So they wanted to, you know, send in their helpers, Satan's helpers there, you know, which might even be relatives. So verse 6, David was greatly distressed, for the people spake of stoning him. He is in deep trouble, because the soul of all the people were grieved, every man for his sons and his daughters, but David encouraged himself in Yahweh, his mighty one. So we can sleep tonight, can't we? Now what about the Talit here? David said to Abiathar, the priest, Ahimelech's son, I pray thee, bring me hither the ephod. And Abiathar brought thither the ephod to David. And David inquired at Yahweh, saying, shall I pursue after their troop? Shall I overtake them? And he answered, pursue, for thou shalt surely overtake them, and without fail recover them. But David was unfaithful in several areas there, which he repented of, to his credit, and he couldn't have, neither could I or you have, repented. You know, people brag about their righteousness, but we couldn't have done it without the Ruach HaKadosh, the Spirit of Yahweh, to arrest us in our sins and to see the vainness of our actions. You know, that all of our human efforts and our philosophies, the things that we think about, you know, some of those Pentecostal churches, is they had wildfire in there, old-fashioned foolishness. They ran down the aisle and they said, Yahweh is over here. And then they'd run down, no, he's over here. And who knows where he was, you know, or if he was there at all. But such foolishness, jumping up and down and rolling in the aisles and being pushed backwards and so on, all that charismatic stuff and prosperity movement and New Age and the material prosperity. And bless me. It was just nothing but a self-religion, that I am God, that I am creating all these benefits for myself. And when we were back there in some of those Christian churches, oh, they meant well. Their hearts seemed to be in the right place, but their actions were less than perfect. Their hearts weren't totally after Yahweh. They served Yahweh. They praised him by another name, you know, by a substitute name, but they also praised Ashtoreth and Balaam, L-O-R-D's. They did, but, well, you don't any longer, hopefully, and I know I don't. So David's sin about Uriah is found in 2 Samuel 12:12, where he sent Bathsheba's husband, I believe, out there to battle, and then Uriah died so he could have Uriah's wife. And there he sinned greatly, and a punishment followed there. For example, the punishment, I want to dwell on that, so that we are further motivated from not too many double negatives here, but we're motivated that we want to keep Yahweh's law. We don't want to break it. 2 Samuel 16. So without further ado, these are, I say Samuel and Judges, they were, and parts of Kings and Chronicles are what I would call in my assembly neglected chapters, even though I would put a greater priority, say, on the book of the Revelation or the book of John or Leviticus as being a higher priority. Read that first. But these they're interesting things. They show the history that we can learn from our past mistakes and be corrected, too, not only by the Ruach HaKadosh, but just by studying and seeing the fallacy of trying to follow our own plans, our own leaders who tell us to go down a dead-end street, an alley. What's a dead-end? There's just nothing in that. Talk about Absalom in 16:22 of 2 Samuel 16:22. So they spread Absalom a tent upon the top of the house. This is preposterous. So Absalom spread a tent upon the top of the house, and Absalom went in unto his father's concubines. I don't care whose concubines they were. He shouldn't have been, you know, his sexual immorality, breaking the commandment of Yahweh. He's unfaithful, very unfaithful. But, you know, there's always that urge there, I suppose. But Absalom went in unto his father's concubines in the sight of all Yisrael. Also see 18:15. And the council of I can't even pronounce that. Ahithophel, when he counseled in those days, was as if a man had inquired at the oracle of Yahweh. And so it was, both with David and with Absalom. So that was 2 Samuel 16. And let's go into 18:15. I think that was the next one. Yeah, certainly. And 10 young men that bear Joab's armor compassed about and smote Absalom and slew him. So there's the rest of the story. Absalom met being murdered by Joab. And that was a judgment of Yahweh that happened to him there. The sword, they say, don't touch Yahweh's anointed. But I think that, where David showed mercy unto Saul. But Joab blew the trumpet, and the people returned from pursuing after Israel, for Joab held back the people. They took Absalom and cast him into a great pit in the wood, and laid a very great heap of stones upon him, and all Israel fled, every one to his tent. I don't know where the funeral was here. Now Absalom, in his lifetime, had taken and reared up for himself a pillar, which is in the king's dale. For he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. And he called the pillar after his own name, and it is called unto this day Absalom's place. So I think that's probably that we'll move on now to 2 Samuel chapter 22. Talking about Well, and some of these in chapter 19, are they enemies or friends of Yahweh? Sometimes it just seems so uncertain. Chapter 22. Here's the victory, though, for those of you who are saying, why does he always dwell on these negative things? Well, we don't always do that. Preachers don't. And what business is it ours to talk about sexual immorality? Well, if it's not Yahweh's business, you know, and we speak for him because he told us to, and speak his word, his name, and the scriptures here. If it is not Yahweh's will, if it isn't, well, then we could forget it. But it is Yahweh's will to interfere in our bedrooms, in our kitchens, with what we eat, and in the U.S. National Forest, what we do in the forest when we're all alone, or we're with somebody else, you know, and whether we're keeping the Sabbath or not, or cheating and chiseling on the beginning of the Sabbath or the end of the Sabbath, or during, when we decide that we want to do our own pleasure. Yahweh says that he will hold us accountable. So it's 2 Samuel then, 22. Yahweh is my rock. David spake unto Yahweh the words of this song in the day that Yahweh had delivered him out of the hand of all his enemies and out of the hand of Saul. And he said, now here's the best part coming. Yahweh is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, the mighty one of my rock. So the rock represents Yahushua the Messiah. He is the rock. Our salvation is, founded on him. Good foundation, the best. And in him will I trust. He is my shield and the horn of my salvation, my high tower. We hear on the Westerns there about somebody being a high tower. I think it was in Gunsmoke, but Yahweh is the high tower. And he is the salvation and shield and refuge, my Savior. Thou savest me from violence. I will call upon Yahweh, who is worthy to be praised. Who is worthy to be praised? Yahweh is. So shall I be saved from mine enemies. When the waves of death compassed me, the floods of ungodly men made me afraid. The sorrows of Gehenna compassed me about. The snares of death prevented me. In my distress I called upon Yahweh and cried to my mighty one, and he did hear my voice out of his temple, and my cry did enter into his ears. Then the earth shook and trembled, the foundations of heaven moved and shook, because he was wroth. Then went up a smoke out of his nostrils, and fire out of his mouth devoured. Coals were kindled by it. No, that's not science fiction Star Trek. I'm sorry if I brought up that image, but people say, oh, there was always these images of so-called gods out there, and our mighty one, they say, is just another one of those visions that people have concocted and conjured up. Well, I'm sorry, no, I'm not even sorry. He bowed the heavens also and came down, and darkness was under his feet. And he rode under a cherub and did fly and was seen upon the wings of the wind. And he made darkness pavilions round about him, dark waters and thick clouds of the skies. Through the brightness before him were coals of fire kindled. And Yahweh thundered from heaven, and the Most High uttered his voice. He sent out arrows. Let's look at verse 23. For all his judgments were before me, and as for his statutes, I didn't depart from them. 29, for thou art my lamp, O Yahweh. Yahweh will lighten my darkness. Verse 47, Yahweh liveth, and blessed be my rock, and exalted be the mighty one of the rock of my salvation. 50, therefore will I give thanks unto thee, O Yahweh, among the heathen, and I will sing praises unto thy name. He is the tower of salvation for his king, and showeth mercy to his anointed, unto David, and to his seed forevermore. And that was in 2 Samuel 22. Well, we're 44 minutes into the broadcast, so it looks like we're going to go up to an hour. Now the main text here is in Ezekiel 43:27. I might just start anywhere in there, so I'm going to go to the right, past the book of Psalms and Solomon's Song and Isaiah. I'm going to go past to Ezekiel. Yes, I was saved by the blood of Yahushua the Messiah in 1975. And I was filled with the Spirit, the Ruach HaKadosh. And then I grew. I came to a point of repentance. And it looked like I repented later after I was saved. Years later, just 3 years later, I really became sober and realized that you can't fool around when you've got Yahweh as your mighty one. So let's start somewhere here in Feast of Tabernacles country in Ezekiel 43. So the Spirit, in verse 5, the Spirit took me up and brought me into the inner court, and behold, the esteem of Yahweh filled the house, and I heard him speaking unto me out of the house, and the man stood by me, and he said, Son of man, the place of my throne, and the place of the soles of my feet, where I will dwell in the midst of the children of Israel forever. And my separated name shall the house of Israel no more defile, neither they nor their kings by their whoredom, nor by the carcasses of the kings in their high places. Excuse me, turn this off here. It'd be a little quieter now. Maybe I should, wait a minute, I'll just direct that, I'll direct it toward me, maybe. That might be a better thing. Hang on. And then the next verse says, in their setting of the threshold by my thresholds, and their post by my posts, and the wall between me and them, they have even defiled my name, my pure name, by their abominations that they have committed. Wherefore I have consumed them in mine anger. Now let them put away their whoredom and the carcasses of their kings far from me, and I will dwell, I will tabernacle in the midst of them. Turning the page now to verse 27. Ezekiel, right near the end of 43rd chapter. Verse 27. And when these days are expired, it shall be that upon the eighth day and so forward, the priest shall make your burnt offerings upon the altar and your peace offerings, and I will accept you, saith Yahweh. So, for previous verse, 7 days shall they purge the altar, and so on. Now, that doesn't mean that the eighth day would be Sunday, the first day of the week, where, like they say, that Sunday was set apart, or in their language, sanctified. Because if it were, then they would start keeping first day of the week or Sunday right here in Ezekiel 43 or 44. And they didn't. Moses didn't, unless, of course, a part of the feast went through the first day of the week, if you catch my reference there. Chapter 44, Ezekiel. And then he brought me back toward the way of the gate of the outward set apart place, the Mikodesh, which looketh toward the east, and it was shut. Then said Yahweh unto me, this gate shall be shut, it shall not be opened. No man shall enter in by it, because Yahweh, mighty one of Israel, has entered in by it. Therefore it shall be shut. That's the east gate there. And it is for the prince, the priest, the prince, he shall sit in to eat bread before Yahweh, go out by way of the same. Verse 6, and thou shalt say to the rebellious, even to the house of Israel, that's speaking to us, unless we're, you know, Greek, or what were those other I mentioned there, Egyptians. Thus saith Yahweh, O you house of, and then it still applies to us anyway, because if we're saved, then we are grafted into the good olive tree, into Yahusha the Messiah, so we still are under the same one law to the homeborn and to the stranger. There's just one law. There's not one for the house of Israel and one for the Gentile Greeks. But I digressed. But back to verse 6, thus saith Yahweh, O you house of Israel, let it suffice you of all your abominations, in that you have brought into my set-apart Mikodesh strangers, uncircumcised in heart and uncircumcised in flesh, to be in my set-apart place, to pollute it, even my house, when you offer the bread, the fat, the blood, and they have broken my covenant because of all your abominations. And you have not kept the charge of my pure things, but you have set keepers of my charge in my set-apart place for yourselves. Thus saith Yahweh, no stranger uncircumcised in heart nor in flesh shall enter into my Mikodesh. Or if any stranger that is among the children of Israel, running into a little heat there, a little trouble, weren't they? Verse 15. But the priests, the Levites, the sons of Zadok, that kept the charge of my set-apart place when the children went astray, children of Israel went astray from me, they shall come near me to minister unto me, and they shall stand before me to offer me the fat and the blood, saith Yahweh. Now, we don't do that now because Yahushua, the Messiah, he is our offering, who is offered only once, not weekly or daily at Mass. 16, they shall enter in by Mikdash, and they shall come near to my table to minister unto me, and they shall keep my charge. And it shall come to pass that when they enter in the inner court, they shall be clothed with linen garments. So maybe that's for us. Maybe we should be wearing linen garments. Maybe. And is that Exodus 29:9, maybe? And no wool shall come upon them while they minister in the gates of the inner court and within. And they'll have linen bonnets. Yeah, that's Exodus 29:9. Whether we're reading here about that in Ezekiel 44. They shall have linen bonnets or tire or hats upon their heads. If somebody, you know, say, turn around, 1 Corinthians 11, Paul said that that was an abomination to wear a hat, but how could it have been? And they shall have linen breeches upon their loins, and they shall not gird themselves with anything that causes sweat. See also 24:15. So some more instructions, and then 20. They shall, neither shall they shave their heads, nor suffer their locks to grow long. They shall only pull their heads, or shear their heads, keep their head and their hair somewhat short, so they can pull their heads or shear it. Neither shall any priest drink wine when they enter into the inner court. Of course, they drink it during the Passover, but not to the inner court. Neither shall they take for their wives a widow. Verse 23, they shall teach my people the difference between the pure and profane. So why aren't we getting that? Why can't I go into a Baptist or a Messianic or some other assembly, Messianic type Hebraic assembly or some other place, Pentecostal, and they teach me the difference to discern between the clean and unclean? They're not doing that much. Oh, there's some, Elijah is out there teaching the clean and unclean. Hezekiah and TNT revealed. So they're not teaching the difference, the pure and profane, and cause them to discern between the unclean and the clean. In controversy, they shall stand in judgment, and they shall judge it according to my judgments, and they shall keep my laws and my statutes in all my assemblies, and they shall set apart my Sabbaths. And they shall, set apart my Sabbaths, and they shall come in, come at no dead person to defile themselves. And some more ordinances there. They shall eat the meat offering, the sin offering. And 30, the first of all, the first fruits of all thy things, and every oblation of all, and of every sort of your oblations, shall be the priest's. You shall also give the priest the first of your dough, you know, the first of your tithe, top of your income. Don't worry about taking after or before taxes. It's just your income. The taxes have no effect in there. A lot of Protestant preachers and so on will say that it does, that you tithe only after the taxes have been taken out. Well, there wouldn't be anything left. And give unto the priest the first of your dough, that he may cause the blessing to rest in thy house. The priest shall not eat of anything that is dead of itself or torn, whether it be fowl or beast. But that law there, that judgment or statute, should apply to all of us, not just priests. That's good for all of us. And I think we shall go on now, since we're 54 minutes in. We better head for Isaiah 29:10, the end of Isaiah 29 there. And as the fan gets louder there, I have to kind of hold that in one hand. What a one-horse operation here today. Well, no, it isn't the end of it, but it's 29:10 through 31, verse 2, if we can get that far. If we go over time, please pardon that. 29:10 of Yeshayahu, or Isaiah, and the vision... Oh, for Yahweh has poured out upon you the spirit of deep sleep and has closed your eyes. The prophets and the rulers the seers as he covered. And the vision of all is become unto you as the words of a book that is sealed, which man delivereth one that is learned, saying, read this, I pray thee. And he saith, I can't, for it is sealed. And the book is delivered to him that is not learned, saying, read this, I pray thee. And he said, I'm not learned. Verse 29:13. Wherefore Yahweh said, for as much as this people draw near me with their mouth and their lips to honor, do honor me with their lips, but they have removed their heart far from me, and their fear toward men is taught by the precept of men. Also find that Psalm chapter 12, verse 2, and Matthew 15, 7. Therefore, behold, I will proceed to do a marvelous work among this people. Marvelous work and a wonder. Verse 16. How about 15? Woe unto them that seek deep to hide their counsel from Yahweh, and their works are in the dark, and they say, who sees us and who knows us? I'm actually reading from King James here, but I dropped the F. I think that's legitimate. Surely your turning of things upside down shall be esteemed as the potter's clay, for shall the work say of him that made it, he made me not, or shall the thing framed say of him that framed it, he has no understanding? It is not yet a very little while, and Lebanon shall be turned into a fruitful field, and the fruitful field shall be esteemed as a forest. And in that day shall the deaf hear the words of the book, and the eyes of the blind shall see out of obscurity and out of darkness. The meek also shall increase their joy in Yahweh, and the poor among men shall rejoice in the separated one of Yisrael. Now I'm going to go to verse 24, at the bottom of my page. 23. But when he seeth his children, the work of my hands, in the midst of him, they shall set apart my name, and set apart the pure one of Jacob, and shall fear Yahweh of Yisrael, or the mighty one, or the eternal of Yisrael. They also that erred in spirit shall come to understanding, and they that murmured shall learn doctrine. They shall learn instruction. I did that. I'm still learning instruction from Yahweh's word. Mainly in the Torah, from Leviticus, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, but also Bereshit or Genesis. Okay, now to the next verse, that's Isaiah 30, verse 1. Most of Isaiah 30 here. Woe to the rebellious children, saith Yahweh, that take counsel, but not of me. You know, we're asking our psychologists what I should do. And, you know, maybe it's not that kind of a dietary question that's causing us problem. Maybe it's a sin problem, a heart problem. Why do we ask the psychologist, the paid Christian psychologist, when we could be asking our fellow brother, our believer, our sister, our believing sister in Messiah? Or we could email one of them. And that cover with a covering, but not of my spirit, that they may add sin to sin. That walk to go down into Egypt, or back to sin, and have not asked at my mouth to strengthen themselves in the strength of Pharaoh, and to trust in the shadow of Egypt. I think America, we're trusting in America or Egypt. Therefore shall the strength of Pharaoh be your shame, and the trust in the shadow of Egypt your confusion. The old lion and viper and flying serpent there, and I was mentioned. In verse 9, that this is a rebellious people, lying children, that will not hear the Torah of Yahweh. What is that then? No, Moses, right? No, it says the Torah of L-O-R-D, or, of course, that's a pagan name, but Y-H-V-H is in the scrolls. We'll not hear the Torah. I mean, they'll read Genesis in a messianic assembly, but why don't we hear the different instructions? Very rarely. That I'm hearing that in the Northwest, at all these different messianic assemblies up and down the Washington, Oregon, California. Well, I haven't been to Southern. Well, Isaiah 30:10, which say to the seers, we say to the seers, see not, and to the prophets, prophesy not unto us right things, but speak unto us smooth things, positive, happy things, joyful things. Don't talk about sin, righteousness, and judgment. Talk about smooth things. prophesy deceits or lies, and they do that. There'll be tongues and interpretation, and it'll always be, it sounds like it's on the edge, that it's warning us of something, but actually it's just confirming that that woman who gave the prophecy was just so spirit-filled that she had this wonderful gift. What a wonderful person, wasn't she? Yeah. Hope I could say hallelujah that she is, that prophetess, that she was a very spirit-filled person and set apart by the Ruach HaKadosh. Verse 11, get you out of the way, get out of the way. Turn aside out of the path. Cause the Pure One of Israel to cease from before us. That's what we're hearing these days. Don't talk about that old dirty Torah, that old legalistic Jewish Torah. That's what they're trying to say. It's against Yahweh's word. Even Paul said that I will esteem in the law or the Torah of Yahweh. I think it's Romans 7. Wherefore, thus saith Yahweh of Israel, because you despise this word, and trust in oppression and perverseness, and stay thereon, therefore this iniquity shall be to you as a breach ready to fall, swelling out in a high wall, whose breaking forth suddenly at an instant, and he shall break it as the breaking of the potter's vessel that is broken in pieces. 17. 1,000 shall flee at the rebuke of one, at the rebuke of five shall you flee, till you be left as a beacon upon the top of a mountain, and as an ensign on a hill. Therefore will Yahweh wait, that he may be favorable unto you, and therefore will be exalted. He will be exalted, that he may have mercy on you, for Yahweh is a mighty one of judgment, or right ruling. Blessed are all they that wait for him. For if the people shall dwell in Zion at Jerusalem, they shall weep no more. He will be very favorable, merciful unto thee at the voice of thy cry when he shall hear it, and he will answer thee. So that time is coming, if not already for some of you, that Yahweh is hearing your cry. Those who are afflicted out there, those true, spirit-filled, Yahweh-filled, Messiah, blood-washed believers. And though Yahweh gave you the bread of adversity and the water of affliction, yet shall not thy teachers be removed into a corner any more. But thine eyes shall see thy teachers, and thine ears shall hear a word behind thee, saying, this is the way. Walk in it. Have that halakha. Walk in it when you turn to the right hand and when you turn to the left. You shall defile also the covering of thy graven images of silver and the ornaments of thy molten images of gold, and thou shalt cast them away as a menstruous cloth. Thou shalt say unto it, get thee hence. And then 26, we're moving on to that high mountain upon the high hill, rivers and streams of waters in the day of the great slaughter, when the towers fall. Verse 26, moreover, the light of the moon shall be as the light of the sun. The light of the sun shall be sevenfold as the light of 7 days. In the day that Yahweh bindeth up the breach of his people and heals the stroke of their wound. Behold, the name of Yahweh cometh from far, burning with his anger, and the burden thereof is heavy. His lips are full of indignation, and his tongue as a devouring fire. His breath as an overflowing stream shall reach to the midst of the neck, to sift the nations with a sieve of vanity. And there shall be a bridle in the jaws of the people, causing them to err. You shall have a song as in the night, when a pure solemnity is kept, like on the Feast of Atonement coming up here, and the gladness of heart as when one goeth with a pipe to come unto the mountain of Yahweh, to the Mighty One of Yisrael. Yes, he is our Savior. He is our Deliverer. Yahweh, Tzidkenu, Hallel Yahweh. Hallel Yahweh, praise him. Verse 1 of the next chapter, Isaiah 31, for two more verses. We've gone an hour here. Let me know if that's too big of a file for you. Drop me an email to StephanYah@yahweh.name. Woe to them that go down to Mitzrayim for help, and stay on horses and trust in chariots, because there are many, and in horsemen because they are very strong. But they don't look unto the separated one of Yisrael, neither seek Yahweh. They seek the L-O-R-D. They don't seek Yahweh. Right? Yet he is also is wise and will bring evil, will not call back his words, but will arise against the house of the evildoers and against the help of them that work lawlessness. Now the Mitzrayim, or Egyptians, are men and not Yahweh, and their horses flesh. They are not spirit. When Yahweh shall stretch out his hand, both he that helped shall fall, and he that is hoping shall fall down, and they all shall fall together. Those that help Yahweh's enemies shall fall down. Now, if there be anything else here that we can discuss, quickly, I gave the email. That's all right. And I was told never say whoops on the radio. We have a lot of teaching, a lot of good things to share, so please surf around on the YahwehYahweh.name website, and I'm sure you'll be informed. I don't know everything that there is to know. I'm not the answer man. But, you know, we need to think in terms of what Yahweh would do, and we don't just make up something that... I think Yahweh would do this, you know, in our own imagination. But what does his word say? There in the Berean Call. Yes, I know the Berean Call is a first day ministry. They keep the first day of the week. They haven't given dominion yet to Yahweh in their time, in their life. But it says there in the Berean Call for this month, the eighth month, 2011, at the bottom of the page. No matter what anyone has in his or her mind about Jesus, only the scriptures can set the record straight, and here's why. Mankind has only three options when it comes to our knowledge about Yahweh. They use G-O-D. Either Yahweh has revealed himself to humanity in both general ways, by his creation, and by very specific terms, his words, or man has conjured up his own ideas about Yahweh. The third option is by far the most common, though. It is a mixture of those two elements there. Yahweh's general realization about, you know, that he created everything, and that by his words. So it's a mixture of those two things, plus bits and pieces of, well, it's bits and pieces of Yahweh's revelation, combined with mankind's opinions and speculations. So of these three points, which one would be the most accurate? Obviously, Yahweh's word. The communication from Yahweh himself would be best. So he communicates with me daily when I pick up the word, or when I remember a verse, or I click on somebody's website and read some scripture verses, or even that horrible Harold on Family Radio. He's got the man there that reads the scriptures, and he'll give it the entire scripture for free. It's, in my esteem, he's better than Alexander Scorby. And can't think of his name right now, but he was, in my opinion, the very best. Your family radio, probably .org, and look up about the scriptures. You can get MP3. You can order a CD for free, I would imagine, or download it for free, certainly. And Hendrik something or another was the man's name who recorded that. Hendrik van Dyke. Okay. Senior moment has passed. So that's about all I have to say there on that. The Berean Call, of course, we remind you of our disclaimer that they don't teach all the truth. They don't, you know, wouldn't agree with keeping the feast days or the names of Yahweh or the clean and unclean, and they would celebrate pagan holidays. But they have things in there that are far beyond the teachings of messianics or nominal churches and so on. They're going to point out about the mixture happening right now. Let's see if I could... I don't know if I want to get off on that or not. But they're talking about how the retiring of Oprah Winfrey, or is that her name? No, the girl that was on TV there, that's correct. Her programs drew, you know, millions. In her last day, it was, I think it was 16 million people that she had listening there. But she influenced with her spiritual advisors. And there's a lot of things in our society today, in our culture, that she has promoted and paraded before the audience. She's brought in Shirley MacLaine, wannabe guru Shirley MacLaine, about out on a broken limb there, and many others that you probably don't even, Tom Cruise, John Travolta, Della Reese, and many other, I can't pronounce this, Eckhart Tolle, and the Kabbalah by Madonna. Well, that's not by Madonna, but she endorsed the Kabbalah that the Jewish errant that says that you can't even know who Yahweh is in the first part of that understanding about the Kabbalah. That you can't even tell who Yahweh is, yet he says, I'm found within the book. You can find me and find my name. Yahweh says this. Yahweh shows and reveals his character to us and his standards. It's all in the book of Yahweh, in the scriptures, commonly called the Bible. We don't use that term Bible here. Another one of those 50 words that we don't use. So surf around, enjoy reading the word and the teaching, the preaching, and drop us a line if there's some sort of a technical problem there, something you'd like to see, or something that we're doing here that maybe we can improve on. Thanks for joining us on YahvehYahweh.name. This program ran an hour and 11 minutes. This is Stefan Yah. Thanks for joining us. Praise unto Yahweh, the King of Kings. Maranatha, may he come quickly in his second coming to come for his bride, the assembly, and where we hopefully will reign and rule with him for 1,000 years during the millennium. Then after that, a great multitude that have not yet known Yahweh's name or his statutes and judgments, has not known his mercy, his unmerited favor, that he shed his blood for us on Calvary, at the torture stake there at Calvary. They will learn doctrine and learn about the instructions of Yahweh, how to love him with all of their heart, soul, mind, and strength. They will learn the Shema. They'll learn how to walk in the Spirit, how to be separated. Of course, in New Jerusalem, there may be something that we still need to be aware of, to turn from and be separated from. I don't know if that's a sound or not, if that's a sound teaching there, but apparently that we have to be very careful and walk circumspectly even in those future times, and to be able to help others and be an example and be a great leader, that every one of us has some sort of a gift in some way, some word that we can help others, if it is founded not by some ethereal spirit out there, but by the word of Yahweh, as it comes straight out from the word of Yahweh, interpreted by what? By itself. The word interprets itself and is harmonized by all the different scriptures having to do on a particular subject. That's harmonizing the word. And so by Yahweh's pure word, that we're able to find the truth and walk in it, the way and the life in Yahushua the Messiah, and to keep his commandments, his statutes, and his judgments that the Messiah, the Son of Yahweh, gave us, that Yahushua, the Messiah, the Son, gave us, and Yahweh, the Heavenly Father, the first and the last, the Aleph and the Tav. So praise unto him, Allah Yahweh. Shalom.